Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Everybody to the Guy James Show, coming to you from high atop the Guy James Show studio complex here up on the third floor. It's kind of warm in the studio today. Have to check out those air conditioning systems, I guess. Thanks for joining us today. We are coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful southwest Florida, about a mile from the Gulf of Mexico, I guess. And we're awfully glad to have all of you along with us today. I appreciate air. Sound like a country boy when I appreciate it all. I appreciate all of you being here. I really do. Much to talk about today. We've got a guest coming up in about 18 minutes. Debbie Metke's going to join us from I think Milwaukee. I'm pretty sure it's Milwaukee. Going to talk to us about John Conyers' visit up there recently and the talk they had about impeachment, and see if it's on John Conyers' mind in any serious way whatsoever. I don't think so, but we'll talk to Debbie and get her take on it, and she's going to call in around 3:20, I think that's going to be. So stay tuned for that. It should be an interesting conversation. I've got my views on John Conyers, and I know she does, and I know many of you do as well. Gosh, I've got so much to talk about today, I don't know how in the world we'll get to all of it. I really don't. That's the way it is. Some days you think, oh, my God, what am I going to talk about? And other days, the day gets here, and you go, oh, geez, there's too much to talk about today. Well, let me set it up for you. What we are going to stress today. First of all, I want to tell you of let you know about a few emails that we got from some of our loyal listeners. And by the way, Kevin, your book is on the way. And let me see what else. Our endeavor here is to inform and educate the electorate and do what we can to do so, because God knows the mainstream media informs you about one candidate and his wife, but not the other. So today, in our endeavor to level the playing field and make sure everybody knows everything about everybody, We all know all about Barack Obama. We all know about Michelle Obama. We all know that the press hates Michelle Obama. The right wing hates her, and they've accused her of this, that, and the other. Well, today we want to educate you about Cindy McCain and her husband, John McCain. There is very much to talk about, far more than we have time for in this program today, but we will do our best to cover as much ground as we possibly can about Cindy McCain and John McCain today on a personal level. Okay, we've talked a lot about him politically, and we'll indulge in some of that today. But we'll also get into some personal things that the press loves to get into people's personal lives. And so I don't want to leave it one-sided, and we'll do what we can to even it up, if you know what I mean. Email today. First of all, I got this great, as you know, we indulge in sarcasm. And tongue-in-cheek on this show quite a bit. And I love the way some of the people who write us go right back at us with the same thing. I got this anonymous quote in the mail today. It says, well, I'm not voting for Obama. Nope. My choice is the guy who graduated in the bottom 1% of his class, cheated on his wife with multiple women, left her when she was at the lowest point in her life, stated publicly that he doesn't really understand economic issues, and has a terrible temper. Yup, after suffering 8 years under Bushy, this is the man I want leading our country. Well, that's in the true Guy James mode there. Whoever wrote that, just, I agree with every bit of it. There you go. Got a great email from Keith. Love this. Guy, I've listened to your show every chance I get, and if I can catch you on iTunes on the horn, how dare you try to educate the public and make us care about what our government is doing to us? Don't you know we have to be blind to the ways of the dark side at the same time voting against our own self-interest? Stop trying to help people with your worthless life and your reading of letters and stuff, you terrorists. Don't you know it's because of George Bush that we haven't been attacked again by Muslims flying gunships and shooting missiles at the Pentagon like on September 11th? He has saved us from attacks by attacking us first. Don't you know that? Liberals make me sick with their helping people and caring less about the America brand and more about the American people. Why don't you shut up and go shopping and leave us to ourselves? P.S. Thanks for what you do. That's from Keith. And more email. I got a bunch of real doozies today, and I love this. This one's from Bonzo. Okay, dear guy, that Lewis, he's talking about the gentleman whose letter we read to you on Tuesday. That Lewis is a classic GOPer. He was clearly too lazy or incapable to do any research of his own and is more than content to repeat ditto head myths, no matter how patently absurd. There is no way this guy was ever a liberal. It's a very common tactic these guys use because they believe they'll create doubt in liberals' heads. The Freepers have gone out to their Free Corps stormtroopers recently with the orders to call in or write liberal talk radio and sow doubt on one issue at a time. Randy Rhodes and Tom Hartman, have been getting them too, so that you are on the list is a good sign. So if you want to revisit the poor soul one last time, tell him Bonzo in that great nanny state in the north, Sweden, is an avid Guy James listener who loves that the state regulates the economy here in a way that permits the general welfare to surpass America's. Just as Karl Marx had an absurd ideation of economics that was more religious in nature than empirical and had to collapse spectacularly, so too with conservatism. Their laissez-faire mythology borders on religious faith and whenever put into practice leads to instability and collapse. Regulation is what permits complexity. The body is regulated not by a legal code, but the genetic code. Instead of laws, proteins, and sugars regulate what we do. Without regulation, no life. Or, at the best, the most simplistic blob. Take regulation out of an existing complex body, you get tumors. So, Lewis, poor ignorant swallower of conservative jazz, keep lugging Limbaugh's load while they laugh at you behind your backs. Bonzo from Sweden. All right. Thank you, Bonzo. Thanks to all of you for all the great email we got yesterday. I wish I had time to read all of it. It was a plethora of interesting email yesterday. And this billboard, you know, I think everybody knows by now that this was put up by some musician looking for some 15 minutes of fame. Cost him a bundle. Billboards aren't cheap nowadays. His name is Mike Meehan, and I think he's from Orlando. I believe that's where he's from. And he put up this big billboard here in Florida, wouldn't you know, why you should not vote for a Democrat this November. And so Marcus sends another email here. It says, I sent this American patriot an email personally thanking him for not mentioning picking up men in airport bathrooms, hitting on teenage pages, playing air guitar while New Orleans drowns, reading books about pet goats while Twin Towers burn, laughing while Americans go to the poorhouse at the gas station, saving brain-dead ladies in Florida, weapons of mass destruction, illegal wiretaps, pissing on the Constitution, and any of the other fun things we Republicans have done over the past 4 years. Email from Marcus. Marcus, thank you very much. Wow. What did you do? Do I have one more of these? Oh, yes, we do. Our commander-in-chief claims the same damn thing. I believe actions speak louder than words, and I say by both of your actions, his and yours, that neither of you are Christians. In passing, I say thank God there are only a few more months of this imbecile in office. I pray, Lord, let there never be another president that has circumvented the U.S. Constitution the way he has. Have mercy upon this great nation that all people may have the same freedoms that our forefathers gave us to start with. May the next president in the name of Jesus be Democrat so that he may expose this current pre-resident and all the graft and corruption of this administration. We all know that if another Republican gets into office that he'll do everything he can to cover up for Bush and his cronies and further the madness that the neocons have created. May the Lord bring our troops home as soon as possible. God bless America, signed a true blue American patriot. I believe that one's from Marcus, actually. And, here's another one here. Sound like a little kid, don't I? Oh, gee. Email from Don. One last email here. Why do people like Bush and Cheney keep breaking the law? Very simple. Don had some other things to say, but they weren't germane to what we're talking about here. But he ends up saying, why do people like Bush and Cheney keep breaking law? Don, it's simple. They keep breaking the law because they can. After all, who's stopping them? Has anybody lifted a finger to stop any of them from breaking the law? As we've said very disappointedly lately, what the Democrats have done is, in my opinion, tantamount to being accessories to a massive amount of the worst kinds of felonies and committed by the Bush administration. And you have to ask the question once in a while, who are the guilty ones here? Can we even separate them out because of the Democrats' willingness to go along with the crimes and look the other way for nothing more than some political expediency? I'm not happy with the party right now. I'm happy with what the party stands for, but I'm not happy the way some of the folks that have been elected are carrying out the stances that we should have from them. They're not carrying them out very well. So, do you remember, on another note, do you remember that huge flap we had recently about the appeasers? Oh, man, do you remember when the Republicans and McCain and all of them just went nuts calling all the Democrats appeasers? Limbaugh and Hannity and all of them? Oh, my God, they went crazy. And here we find out, and it was all because of a lot of it was because Obama said that we ought to meet with some folks from Iran and maybe sit down at a table and hash some of this out. And so, what happens? Just a couple of days ago, you know, the McCain folks found out that Ahmadinejad is coming to the United Nations in September. And the McCain campaign comes out with this statement, says, well, perhaps he and Senator Obama can finally have that heart-to-heart. It does appear that John McCain's going to have to get in line there, because yesterday Bush is sending a top U.S. diplomat to meet Iran's nuclear negotiator this week, a major break with his hardline stance toward Tehran and the closest contact between the countries since the 1979 Iranian Revolution. And then today it comes out and says the U.S. plans to establish a diplomatic presence in Tehran for the first time in 30 years as part of a remarkable turnaround in policy by President George Bush. The Guardian, a good place to look if you want to find out real news a lot of the time, The Guardian has learned that an announcement will be made in the next month to establish a U.S. interest section, a halfway house to setting up a full embassy. The move will see U.S. diplomats stationed in the country. Well, well, well. Don't you think that's interesting? He was called an appeaser. They compared him to Neville Chamberlain, did those Republicans. And now it turns out those damn Bush administration people are themselves the appeasers. I knew it. I knew it. Appeasers. What about that, Rush? What about that, Sean? What about that, Laura? Appeasers. Appeasers, the Republicans. Oh my God, can you get over it? They're actually going to talk to the Iranians? Who would have thunk it? I think that is an amazing, amazing turnaround. I know that word's overused nowadays, but it is fascinating that after all the falderall that took place, when Barack Obama said that we ought to sit down and talk with them. You know, what a foreign notion, huh? Especially to Republicans, that we ought to sit down and try and negotiate, that we ought to try and use, you know, the powers of persuasion and whatever we can to avoid an armed conflict. What a novel idea to Republicans. How odd. They figured out how to spell that word and what it means, diplomacy. Yes, that's the way knowledgeable, that's the way learned, that's the way intelligent people solve their problems, if they can. Armed conflict is a last resort by civilized people. A last resort. So, gosh, I don't know what to say. Knowing now that these Republicans are, you know, the leader of the party, the Mr. Bush and Condi Rice and Dickie Boy Cheney, and all those folks are wanting to talk to Ahmadinejad, wanting to talk to the Iranians. Appeasers. Republicans. It's such an odd concept. It really is. We're gonna pause for a break right now, and we'll wait for our guest to get back with us in just a minute. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Guy James Show.
We're spend every day.
We disrupted a terror plot.
Having information
plot where
the human dignity is the gift of God.
Willing to kill innocent life.
The ideals of America.
Political.
The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. Our intelligence sources tell us that he has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production. Saddam Hussein is not credibly explained.
You don't have to be a lowlife your whole life, Mr. President. You don't have to declare war on innocent people, on innocent people. With every generation, there starts a useless war. word manipulation. They tell us what it's for. They now have more joy. They use them to destroy. And he follows their orders as soldiers get redeployed.
The more you begin to investigate, the more you begin to see we've been lied to. Been lied to by every institution.
You don't have to be in the right your whole life, Mr. President. You don't have to declare war on innocent people. You don't have to be in the right your whole life. Since the Great Depression, the family takes their pay, committing crimes against humanity as the media looks the other way. You don't have to be in the light your whole life, Mr. President.
With the Guy James Show. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that tune. Hey, as promised right now, we've got Debbie Metke on the phone, and she wanted to talk to us about a little visit John Conyers paid to Milwaukee, Debbie?
Yes.
Yes, as I recall. I hadn't looked at that for a little while. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Guy. I love your show. I've been listening to you for about 3 years now.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that. And yes, your presence is we feel it, you know? How about taking a moment and telling everybody why you wanted to talk to him today?
Well, I think anybody that's been paying attention to the media ever since this Bush administration got in has just been pulling their hair out. And, last August, I was searching online for an impeachment group here in Milwaukee, and there were a lot of people that wanted to sign up for one, but nobody wanted to lead. So I thought, well, I'll be the leader, and somebody will emerge as a real leader.
Too busy drinking beer and making motorcycles, huh?
There you go. Yeah. Well, we care about the nation, too. So anyway, we got a guy named Buzz Davis from Madison who's leading the impeachment effort there down to talk with us and got a big group. And by our second meeting, all of a sudden we had our Congresswoman Gwen Moore come to it. And, boy, we gave her a snootful of ideas of why we thought she should be for this. And she kind of, you know, buckled up against us a little bit, but she was very open to listening to us. And then in September, we have a big deal. About 7,000 people come to something called Fighting Bob Fest up in Baraboo, Wisconsin, bunch of liberals. And Gwen Moore came out, and the crowd wasn't real pleased with her take on impeachment. And I think between all of this, you know, she came over to our side on it, and she signed on for impeachment of Cheney.
And, no.
And we've been very active throughout this time. We've had TV shows. We had a panel discussion, two pro-impeachment, two against, that was aired on our local airwaves here. And we've had demonstrations, of course, when McCain, Obama, and Hillary came to town. By the way, I had a Bush outfit on with a sign saying, "Impeach me, I'm out of control." And when McCain saw it, he gave the thumbs up and smiled. So I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, give us a little bit about the demographic of Milwaukee. It's a good old-fashioned union town, at least years ago. Is it a Democratic enclave?
Yes. Our state is a swing state, Wisconsin is. It's not like Madison. Madison's one.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I know. So it's not quite as progressive as you might think, but you know, we're working on it, and yes, it does balance over to that demographic.
Good. In Madison, by the way, folks, I'm a Big Ten football fan, Ohio State, as you know, and have made many trips to Madison and Lake Mendota in the fall. And no place is more liberal and crazy than Madison, Wisconsin on a Saturday football day.
That's right. Liberal and sane, I would say. But
yes.
And it is beautiful here in the fall.
Oh, nothing like it. Nothing
right.
Like it. So you got the congressman swayed over to his congresswoman swayed over to your way of thinking, at least.
Uh-huh.
And was John Conyers there recently?
Yes, he was.
How did you get him there?
Well, he came out here for a fundraiser for another congressman here in the state, Kagan.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody in our impeachment group, we've been very good keeping in touch with emails, so that's how we all, you know, kind of unify. And somebody, it was about 2.5 weeks ago, they emailed me and said, "Hey, Conyers is going to be in Milwaukee for this fundraiser for Kagan. You know, we should go out with our impeachment signs and protest." So we did, and just overnight this happened. We had about 35 people out there, all with impeachment signs, and just never dreamed we'd get to see Conyers. We thought we'd, you know, maybe get to trip him quick when he came from the car into the building, but he came out and talked with us. And then he said he'd meet with us for about 15 minutes after the fundraiser was over. So we were all excited and waited around, and then word came down from his aide that, well, we're kind of tired. We don't know if this is going to happen. And I'm not quite sure what happened, but I know at one point, this might have been set up before I went in, but I went in with my Bush costume. I took the head off and went up to Conyers, who was kind of mingling at the end with a few big shots, and I said, "Are you sure you can't come and see us for 15 minutes? These people really would just like to ask you a few things." And he said, "No, what I'd really like to do is meet with you all tomorrow morning at the Pfister Hotel, which is the fanciest hotel in Milwaukee, and have a meeting because I want to spend more time on this issue, and I have questions for you and your group." And I thought, oh, he's going to bail. He's going to get to the airport and take off on us. But I looked into his eyes, kind of like Bush did with Putin, and I trusted his soul. And anyway,
you know, Debbie, I've been around him a couple of times in the not so distant past, and wanted to talk about that subject, and he just flat refused. And I also have some friends that got arrested outside of his office, so I'm surprised that he approached you about talking about this.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised too. I can't quite explain it, but he seemed to want to listen to us, believe it or not. So I had to go back out to our group and say, well, he says he wants to meet with us tomorrow. We don't know if he's really going to be there. But anyway, the next morning, not only was he there, it was the meeting was supposed to be 8 in the morning, but he started at like 10 minutes to 8. So people kept dribbling in, and eventually we had, I guess it was 22 people all come in, and this is all last-minute stuff. But he was very respectful. He was very serious. He listened to us. He explained his part in all of this, and he seems to be searching for a way to make this happen. It's a little hard to know if he was, you know, well, he didn't have to meet with us. I think that says
no, he sure didn't.
Right.
That's really surprising to me.
Yeah.
It really is. And here's the thing I've wondered, and if you listen regularly, you know I've chided him a great deal for not getting anything done on impeachment. But to be perfectly fair here, and I always try and be fair, well, most of the time anyway, I do wonder how much he has been shackled by Nancy Pelosi and what kind of sway she holds over him and everybody else to really keep this subject off the table, because they've done a very good job of it so far in ignoring impeachment. It's just like they cringe when they hear the word.
Right. Well, I do remember he stood up for Pelosi a little bit. He thinks she's in a bind. And he made it clear he thinks he's in a bind, too. A big part of it is he doesn't want to rock the boat for the jobs of his fellow Congress people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked quite a bit about that, how, you know, it's when the Democrats have guts, you know, that people want to support him more. We're just pretty disgusted with all of this.
How do you figure, you and I are like-minded on this. I believe that if they stood up and showed some guts and went after them and got the truth out on this, I think the public would really respect them for it. Obviously, they believe just the opposite.
Well, and he acted like this was a little new to him when we came out so strongly for what you just said. And he said, well, if you can get that word out to my fellow Congress people, you know, let's start convincing them. And then he did mention, of course, the Blue Dog Democrats, and there's so many, you know, vacillating in the middle. And
well, there's only, what, 37, or is it 47 Blue Dogs? I don't know. Well, that's a good number, though.
It's more like 47.
Yeah, I think it is 47.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
No, please continue.
Well, he started out by saying we're his family and we're like-minded on all of this. Should I just run by a couple of points quick here that he talked about? Or?
Yes, you've got all the time you would like.
Oh, I do? Okay.
Yes.
Well, this isn't in any type of order exactly, but, you know, we brought up the Clinton impeachment, and he said that was totally illegal. You can't impeach over a personal matter. But he said most people don't know enough to protest it, which is one of the main messages, of course, that, you know, we have an ignorant populace who doesn't pay attention to a lot of this stuff. He said, though Pelosi says impeachment is off her table, it's not off his. He said Dennis Kucinich and he are good friends, as are he and our own beloved Russ Feingold. He said that he and his people have been polling their fellow Congress people, and they've warned Bush that if he attacks Iran, that will be equal to an impeachable offense.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we said, hey, it's a little late by then.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned to him, I said, what if Israel attacks? And he acted surprised about that, like, well, you know, that's not our country, for what that's worth. Some people said, yeah, but Bush and Cheney are sneaky and they could engineer an attack and not take responsibility. I hope I'm not getting too out there for your radio program.
You've listened to the program. You know you're not too out there.
All right. Anyway, Conyers agreed that they could be capable of doing something like that to have a war. Let's see. One of his main points is he said they're working on ways to hold these people accountable after office and indicted after office, even if he's not impeached. They do believe he's guilty of felonies, and Bush has been warned by his own lawyers not to leave the U.S. after leaving office, as he could be arrested or end up at The Hague. So that's
yes.
Pretty juicy. And Conyers is trying to put together, he says, an airtight case on all types of fronts. He's been consulting with constitutional experts and different politicians that work with him and the citizens. He said he really needs us to speak out on this. They're getting an assessment from, you know, it's a little late now. You know, he should have been doing this for a couple of years now, but,
yeah.
You know.
Well, they had their chips on the table in a moderate way anyway. And first of all, I want to agree with you, Russ Feingold. In my opinion, there may be two hands full of really great people in the House and in the Senate, and Russ Feingold is probably on the top handful of those. I have enormous respect for Russ Feingold. Enormous respect. I am so. I wish he would have found a way to go for the Oval Office. I would have backed him above anybody, I think.
Right. So, yeah, we're very proud of him.
You as well. You should be.
Mm-hmm.
They just. There's just not many guys like Russ and or gals like Russ Feingold.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder sometimes when I some of the comments that Conyers has made to you, I wonder sometimes if they say things just to placate us. I wonder if they really. It's hard for me, and what I'm getting at here, it's really hard for me. I mean, here you and I, you're in Milwaukee, I'm in South Florida. We're out here in the hinterlands, although we are. Well informed politically, but it's really hard for me to think that those inside the Beltway don't have their finger on the pulse of just about anything that's being said and done here in this country. But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, they, according to Conyers, most of the country isn't pushing for this at all. So the question, of course, came up about the media holding the truth of all these crimes or, you know, alleged crimes from the public. And of course, he agreed. And I said to him, that's why we need you to speak out. You know, who's going to hold this country accountable to the rule of law, you know, before ourselves and the world, if you don't speak up? Because the media is so complicit. And he mentioned, yes, the media is really in there with McCain's campaign and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But we didn't want to waste time talking about the media. We all agreed with that. But that's the point. You know, then somebody like him has to bring this up.
Well, they have that bully pulpit, and they ought to use it. They ought to be out on the steps of the Capitol building, and if they go out on the steps of the Capitol building, the media will be there waiting for them.
Good point.
They'll never turn down an opportunity. So I have so little confidence in this Congress right now, and especially our Democratic majority. I really believe that if this were back in the days of Watergate, they could have, Dennis Kucinich would be standing there bringing up articles of impeachment against Nixon, and the Democratic Congress would have gone, I don't think we want to bother with this. I really believe that that's the way this Congress would act. I don't know.
So one of the duties Conyers gave to us, you know, if we want to believe him or not, but why not? Why not shoot for the most? Is to go after all these Congress people and just put them on the line and say, how do you feel? If we can prove one impeachable offense, are you going to stand up for the rule of law here? So we're working on it, and I want to put that out to your listeners for what it's worth. You know, put them on the line. How can they just, you know, overlook this stuff? Now, he did say, this is a little off the topic, but he made kind of a point, and he was waffling a little, I think, that Congress people are elected by their constituents to respond to what they want, and they don't seem to be wanting impeachment, you know, so we didn't like that. And of course, we gave him our reasons for impeachment, and he said he's heard them all, and he said don't ever tell Congress people their duty when it comes to the Constitution. And this was kind of eye-opening and disturbing to me. He said impeachment is not a requirement. I mean, it's out there in the Constitution, but you can just weigh factors into account and see if you want to do it or not. And then we had a Vietnam vet get up and kind of ream him out, so to speak, and say, hey, sir, you know, you swore to uphold the Constitution like I did, and this is very disheartening. You know, who's going to stand up for us?
Maybe he needs, and all of them, maybe they need to sit down in the House chamber and have somebody play the audio of that great Barbara Jordan speech way back when. About impeachment of Richard Nixon. That should send shivers down everybody's spine. I don't know if you've heard it. I did have it listed here someplace. Maybe I can find it later. But she gave a great, dynamic, hard-hitting speech back during Watergate about impeachment, and I think they all should listen to it. It might do them some good.
I haven't heard it. Maybe I have, but I'd love to listen to it again. Now, just today it came out that maybe you talked about it on your show. I'm afraid I'm at work here taking a late lunch. But I'll be listening to it later when I download it. But Bush is denying what the Congress is requesting, documents for FBI interviews regarding the Valerie Plame affair.
Yes, executive privilege once again. They never fail to grab that when they can. You know, after you and I are done here, I'm going to play that Barbara Jordan, July 25th, 1974. Almost 34 years ago, and I'll play that little after we're finished here.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear about all this. I always like to hear, you know, I get one thing. If we go to a radio row, to a conference in Washington or something, they have one behavior for interviews. The Congress people do.
Mm-hmm.
They've got another type of behavior if you go visit them in your office, in their offices. And then, again, when they come out and have a little heart-to-heart with you, like in a small group like that, you might even get a third persona show up. I'm always interested in seeing these folks in all different types of environment. And it sounds like I really love to know, and I'm so intrigued, as much as John Conyers had shied away from this subject, I'd love to know what pulled the trigger for him on this to come and meet with you in the morning. I'm really astonished at that. I really am.
I don't think I have an answer for you. We were astonished, too. But he was very sincere. And we did have one guy come in with a TV, well, a video camera, and videotaped most of our meeting. And somebody said, oh, we think he shut down a little bit when that came on board. But I don't think that was true. He was still, I thought, very honest with us. So we do have footage of this.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Well, Deb, I wanted to tell you one
thing. Yes, please do.
I don't know if you heard that an unidentified government official of a U.S. ally wants to participate with Kucinich when he makes his case to impeach Bush. And Conyers is going to let it happen because he thinks this ally might provide a new angle on this, maybe, you know, lying his country into war.
An unidentified representative of one of our allies.
Right. This came out two nights ago.
Hmm. You know, I hadn't even heard that.
Google unidentified government official of a U.S. ally.
Yeah.
Oh, and could I just end by telling you a few things?
You can end any way you'd like.
Oh, okay. He said, we all kind of talked, but we thought trying Bush for past wrongs might look political. So if we focused on the upcoming war with Iran, you know, God forbid if it happens. But that might be a strategy to get more people concerned about this issue. So that might be our leverage. Somebody thought we could win I won't go into this, bringing Ron Paul folks in and getting more Democrats on board for this. Someone said if we could find one really impeachable point, and as Conyers said, as far as I'm concerned, all of Kucinich's points are worthy. And but the other thing is to get our Congress people, you know, go after them and have them sign on to Kucinich's resolution and also introduce their own impeachment resolutions. 90 Congress people did that in 1973 with Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all they have to do is stand up on the floor and say they're introducing their own impeachment resolution. Don't even have to make a big speech. But we're going to be going, you know, as far as we can, outreaching to all the Congress people across the nation and saying, you know, where do you stand on this? If there is at least one impeachable offense, are you going to stand by the rule of law or not?
Well, thank God for Dennis Kucinich. Dennis is a brave guy, and he, as I understand it now, with these hearings that Conyers is going to have, whether Conyers is serious about doing anything about it or not, or whether he'll even bring anything to a vote, that he is going to at least have hearings, and that they will be televised. Now, if they have those televised, I believe Dennis Kucinich would have done probably the greatest service that anybody could have done to at least educate the public on what has happened, and it's the public who clearly have had their heads in the sand.
Clearly, right. I suppose it'll be on cable TV, though, and won't.
Oh, it'll be on C-SPAN, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I'm told that it's going to be on C-SPAN, so we shall see.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Well, I learned from you here, too, guys.
Well, I hope it turns out to be absolutely the fact. That's what I was told yesterday, and we'd be grateful. Debbie, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. You've brought up brought us some great details, and it's always good to hear what's going through the minds of our political people in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And good to talk to somebody from Milwaukee. I love the state of Wisconsin.
I suppose I have an accent, huh?
No, not any more of an accent. I'm a Midwestern person, and I don't know how much of a Milwaukee. I'm from a place that's known for bratwurst. In fact, I'm from a place that calls itself the bratwurst capital of the world.
Oh.
And, of course, Sheboygan, the boys over at Sheboygan, Wisconsin, they call themselves the bratwurst capital of the world, and they have a festival every year as well. Well, every year, the Sheboygan bratwurst folks, they set up a big stand at the Badgers football games.
Uh-huh.
And every other year when we go up there to play, why, I would always stop and get a bratwurst and, you know, onion and mustard on rye. And stand there and eat it in front of them, and they would always say, well, how's the bratwurst? And I'd always look at them and go, not bad. Not bad. And they'd always say, oh, you're from Ohio, aren't you? And they knew exactly where. So we always had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, that's funny. Well, it was a real joy for me to be on your show, and a lot of our people will be listening to it. And thanks for the great job you're doing educating all of us.
Well, we'll keep on keeping on with that. You're very well spoken. It's a pleasure to have you on the program today and anytime, okay?
And I hope your people out there call their Congress people right away.
Absolutely.
And mobilize other people to do it. That seems to really be what Conyers wanted to hear.
Yep, that is. That's the only thing that works.
Yes.
Debbie, thank you so much. Debbie Mecki.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now. Interesting. Very interesting. Now that this has got to a hearing situation with John Conyers presiding, and although we've heard that it will not come to a vote or anything like that, and we've heard Nancy Pelosi reiterate her position that there will be no impeachment vote, let's see what happens. Let's see if the light of truth shines on some of this horribly filthy laundry coming out of the Bush administration. Let's see if exposed to the public, let's see if the public will still stand for some of the things the Bush administration has done. Yes, I know Americans are busy people. I know many of them are apathetic to political things. I know many of them don't pay any attention at all. But maybe, just maybe, some of these things are brought out into the open. Some of them are proven. Some of them are nailed down with Dennis Kucinich and whoever else there to do it on TV. Maybe, just maybe, some of the Congress critters that we have there will change their minds and decide to pursue it a little bit. Hey, listen, this isn't about vengeance. This isn't about vengeance at all. If there's going to be any justice in this world, if there's going to be any justice in the United States, if this country, if Lady Liberty can stand for what she used to stand for once again, with the scales, Lady Justice, with the scales of justice and all, if that's ever going to be, if it's ever going to be, ever going to matter again, if it's ever going to matter at all, the scales of justice, then we cannot allow the leadership of this country to break the laws on a whim. We cannot allow the leadership of the country to do whatever they want and impose laws on the rest of us. The law is for everyone, not just the working men and women, not for the poor, the middle class, or the rich. It's for everyone, from the bottom up in the socioeconomic scale. It's for everyone. Now, we all know, we all know that sometimes money will buy you out of big problems in this country. And that's a black eye on our justice system here in this country, and it does happen. But with the entire country looking on, the entire country, whether they want to accept it or not, and believe me, I'm old enough to remember Watergate very well. There were a whole lot of people back during Watergate that didn't want to believe it of Richard Nixon either. Despite what you may hear about Richard Nixon today, many, many people. You don't hear any good words about Richard Nixon. Let me tell you, Richard Nixon was a popular president up until time, not with me, but he was a popular president up until this time this Watergate swill came pouring out. And the country did pay attention to that. And they did demand that something be done about it. And when he found out that something was going to be done about it, that's when he quit. He was forced to resign. Because he knew. He knew all the dirty laundry that was going to be hung on the line for everybody to see. What has changed between then and now? What has happened to change the makeup of our Congress so much between then and now? Why were the people in those days, 34 years ago, why were they intent upon bringing justice, even to the highest office in the land? Why would they bring justice then, and today they've ignored far, far worse transgressions? Far worse transgressions. I'm looking at my bookshelf. John Dean's book, Worse Than Watergate, sits on my shelf. It's a great book. And John was deadly serious when he wrote that book about how the transgressions of the Bush administrations are far more serious than anything Richard Nixon did. Far more serious. And yet we have a Congress of the United States willing to look the other way. And it's just hard for me to accept that within the halls of the Capitol building, that the people there have changed that much in just 34 years. This country isn't that old. This country always seemed to know right from wrong. And I think we still know right from wrong, but why are we in a place now when they're willing to accept it to be wrong? I don't know. If you know the answer to that, give me a call. We're going to pause for a break. Here is Barbara Jordan speaking of that in July 25th, 1974.
You folks.
Well, maybe not. I see Barbara's missing here in the file. Okay, thought she was there. Anyway, she made a great impassioned speech. Google it. It's believe me, it's something special. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join the program, we'd love to have you. We really would. And love to hear your ideas and what Debbie spoke about. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Remember when a batter would get hit by the ball? He'd drop his bat and trot to first. There wouldn't have to be a brawl. And the talking heads on TV would disagree about the news. It wouldn't be a shouting match. They'd shake hands when they were through. Is this America, the land that we once knew? When we were all in it together, with different points of you, we would listen to each other. That's what Americans do. Is this America, or just states of red or blue? When you needed help, you could call and reach someone. You wouldn't get a message telling you to please press one. Celebrities weren't royalty, leaders weren't above the law. And remember when a school was the safest place of all? Is this America, the land that we once when we were all in it together, with different
But if we give in to fear, won't we lose what we've had here? This is America, the land that we all love. And there's nothing that together we can't rise above. Trust in one another, that's how our nation grew. This is America, the red, white, and blue. We are America, red, white,
oh, wow. First time I've heard that. Eric Gnezda. Hard to pronounce that name. GNEZDA.com. Someone told they get a virus from it. I'll try and hunt up something else for you to look at. Hey, anyway, welcome to the program. You're listening to the Guy James Show. We've got a guest on the line right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just had a comment on what you were saying about Watergate. I just finished reading the Alderman Diaries. My teacher gave it to me for some summer reading. And I agree 100% with what you're saying about how this is much worse than Watergate, what Bush and Cheney are doing. But I think the reason Congress is looking the other way, because a lot of it does have to do with, terrorism, or at least that's what they put, that's what they label it. So I think the country just wants to look the other way because they're concerned about national security.
Well, perhaps you're right on that. If you are right on that, that would mean that they've exploited the country's concern for national security for, in some cases, their own interest. Perhaps that's why Congress has looked the other way. I don't know. I don't know. Having lived all through the Watergate thing and followed it very closely, and to this day still have a friend that was involved in it, in one, John Dean, and we have John on the program now and then. It is much worse. That was really a silly thing that happened in those days. There were some bad things that happened, but basically it was silliness with the break-in and the cover-up and all that. This time, the cover-up's not worse than the crime. The crime is far worse than the cover-up. Thanks for... you have any other comments?
Just basically saying that, it shouldn't be any surprise to anyone that they are exploiting this. They're making money off the oil. These are the two richest men off of oil who have ever been in office.
Yeah.
And they both made their fortunes off of that. And I just think that this is way worse, like you said, than what Nixon did. But the country is much more willing to let things go when it comes to war and terrorism than it is with their election cycle.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you are right. Those that are involved in politics, at least to some extent, are terribly, terribly worried about the terrorism, and I think overly so. It's not that it's not like something we don't have to watch out for, because we do, and we always will. But we will never, ever stamp out all terrorism. We have gone after a gnat with a sledgehammer. And I think they have exploited the American people, and I am wondering in this election cycle if we'll start seeing the threat alerts pretty soon, the orange and the red and all that sort of thing. We shall see. You said your teacher gave that to you to study in what context? Are we talking university, high school? What are we talking here?
I'm in seventh grade.
Ah.
She just gave that to me because she thought I would really like it.
Oh, very cool. Haldeman?
Yes.
Yeah, him and Ehrlichman are both gone now. Yes, very interesting. I've read that. And, of course, you read a lot about John Dean on there, I'm sure. John Dean is a friend of the program and has been on the program several times. We talk to him on a regular basis. And so good, good. Study that. That's a fascinating time in history, and I'm glad your teacher is brought to that to your attention. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye now. Well, I believe that may have been our youngest caller ever right there. And, gosh, that's a good thing, isn't it? That is a good thing. Love it when young folks are interested in history and current events and all that. I like that a lot. I've been one that always been had my nose in that sort of thing. So, hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back in just a short time. So get yourself a cold one. We'll be right back. Don't get a cold Budweiser, though, because you know that's foreign owned nowadays. Buy a beer from Milwaukee.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator John McCain calls Social Security a disgrace, but the AFL-CIO says it's an American success story, it's not broken, and it's not a disgrace. The Labor Federation says Social Security is a cornerstone of American retirement security, and McCain wants to gamble it away with risky privatization and diversion schemes that will only weaken it. McCain, the AFL-CIO notes, has used every opportunity to vote to replace Social Security with private accounts that will undermine the system. What millions of Americans who depend on Social Security need, the AFL-CIO says, is a president who will strengthen the system, protect it, and bring it into long-term balance. The Center for Economic and Policy Research says while shoring up mortgage giants Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae is necessary, they should not be given unlimited tax dollars without strings attached. The economic think tank says the incompetence of their management has made this government rescue necessary. The housing bubble collapse means the values of homes aren't as high as the mortgages, triggering the crisis of loan defaults. The Center for Economic and Policy Research says Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac contributed to the housing bubble by continuing to issue loans based on false bubble prices. So taxpayer support to keep those mortgage lenders afloat must come with stringent requirements on how the companies and their loans are managed in order to protect taxpayers from future management irresponsibility. The United Kingdom saw a bit of chaos on Wednesday as hundreds of thousands of workers walked off their jobs. Jesse Russell reports.
Anywhere from 300,000 to 500,000 civil servants walked off the job in the UK as part of a one-day strike. The walkout disrupted libraries, schools, garbage collection, sports centers, and more, as workers protested a plan to only raise wages by 2.45%, a plan that is below the rate of inflation. The workers are represented by the trade union, Unison, and General Secretary Dave Prentice said the workers who walked off the job are some of the lowest paid in the government, as the cost of necessities, like bread and heating oil, sharply increase.
Female road construction workers are now getting equal acknowledgement in Atlanta work zones. The city of Atlanta has long used the iconic men at work signs in roadway construction zones, even though it isn't only men who are at work. Following a formal complaint made by the editor of Pink magazine that the signs are discriminatory, the city has made the decision to put up gender-neutral signs that say workers ahead.
Here is today's economic report. The U.S. has set a new record. Inflation hit a 26-year high in June, with consumer prices jumping by 1.1%. The Labor Department revealed those numbers as Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke testified for a second day on Wednesday in front of Congress. Accelerating inflation puts the Reserve in a complicated position by making it difficult to cut interest rates that would normally be used to boost the floundering economy.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
thanks for lending an ear.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. You know, I was thinking throughout the news and the break there at the top of the hour, how cool to have a young man from the seventh grade call in and be so astute on political history and Watergate and all that. I love that. I just absolutely love that, and kudos go out to his teacher, whoever it may be. I have a niece. I have a niece who graduated from university just last year, and is just now actually getting her first teaching job. And so I've been in touch with my brother, her father, about getting the job and all. And I'm appalled. Most places in the country, at the money teachers make, and most of them don't do it for the money. They do it because they're dedicated people, and it's so good to find teachers who inspire kids, build interest in them. I love that. I don't think there's anybody more valuable than a good teacher. Nobody more valuable than a good teacher. I often am looked at kind of funny when I say this, but I believe teachers are as should be as well paid as doctors, because they have our most important, most valuable research and resources in their hands, and that's why I've long thought. And think back, all of you, think back. I don't know how you feel about your academic days, but I can think of several people, teachers and professors, whatnot, who have had a profound influence on my life. And that's why I feel that way about teachers. I know some people that, well, I can't wait to get out of school and all that. But, man, that's so important. So important. 866-546-5254. Yes, Powerpuff. Nurses, too. Looking at the... I knew that was going to come in there. Ah, yes. Ah, yes. doesn't miss a trick. Doesn't miss a trick. All right. I promised you at the start of the program today we were going to try and talk today about some more history. And have I know that the media, the mainstream media, has not been fair. And I don't think they've been fair to Barack Obama. I don't think they've been fair to Michelle Obama. And I think they've given the McCains a pass, both of them. Although Cindy's not running for office. But in the interest of being fair, we know everything there is to know about the background and upbringing of Michelle Obama. We know the criticisms that she has taken. We know the criticisms about their church, their faith, all that sort of thing. And yet we know precious little about Cindy and John McCain. All we know is we know that we have a candidate, and God bless him for his service to our country. And no one's taking anything away from what he endured during the Vietnam captivity period of his life, the POW period. No one's taking anything. Kudos to him for that. However, he has mentioned many, many times that he would not use that as a tool in his campaign. And just once again today, I've heard him bring up, he said he didn't want to talk about it that much, didn't want to make it an issue. Well, he was giving a speech somewhere today. I don't know. I think Kansas City. I believe it was Kansas City. And once again, down toward the end of the speech, here it comes. Well, as you know, I was a POW in Vietnam, and my country always came first, and he went on and told the story once again. So he is not reticent to bring that up whatsoever. Well, I want to go a little further, and I want to help John McCain explain his past, and I want to help explain his wife's past so that we all know everything about all four of them, the spouse and candidate on both sides. And so that's what we're after here. How many of you know that Cindy McCain, and I say this with no ill intent other than to, like I said, even the scales out, how many of you know that Cindy McCain was outed for drug addiction? How many of you know that? Many people have been. But this is a particularly interesting story. And actually, this news story comes way back from 1999. And the McCains attempted to get tough with a whistleblower, and it backfired. And the McCain spin machine went into overdrive. And therefore, Cindy McCain, the candidate's wife, confessed the problems the media was already ready to reveal. That's right. And so I want to give you some of that out of Salon from clear back in 1999. GOP presidential candidate John McCain's wife, Cindy, took to the airwaves recounting for Jane Pauley on Dateline and Diane Sawyer on Good Morning America the tale of her one-time addiction to Percocet and Vicodin and the fact that she stole the drugs from her own nonprofit medical relief organization. It was a painful thing to do. It was also vintage McCain media manipulation. Said, I had watched Cindy McCain on TV, perky in a purple suit with tinted pearls to match. It was so reminiscent of the summer day in 1994 when suddenly, years after she'd claimed to have kicked her habit, McCain decided to come clean to the world about her addiction to prescription painkillers. I believe she wore red that day. She granted semi-exclusive interviews to one TV station and three daily newspaper reporters in Arizona, tearfully recalling her addiction, which came about after painful back and knee problems and was exacerbated by the stress of the Keating 5 banking scandal that had ensnared her husband. To make matters worse, McCain admitted she had stolen the drugs from the American Voluntary Medical Team, her own charity, and had been investigated by the Drug Enforcement Administration. The local press cooed over her hard luck story. One of the four journalists spoon-fed the story. Now, the fact that she was addicted to painkillers and all, that isn't the story here. And that's not why I bring this up at all. The reason I brought this story up was that the McCain spin machine and his power at the time went into action and manipulated the law enforcement people in Arizona and got her out of what could have been a mess for anybody else. The story wasn't about Cindy McCain's addiction. It was much more about her efforts to keep that story from coming to light and the possible manipulations of the criminal justice system by her husband and his cohorts. Both of Cindy McCain's staged teary drug addiction confessions have been vintage John McCain, and his MO is this: get the story out. Even if it's a negative story, get it out first with the spin you want, with the details you want, and without the details you don't want. And McCain did it with the Keating Five, with the story of his failure of his first marriage, Cindy. Cindy's his second wife. So what you recall after the humble, honest interview is not that John McCain did favors for savings and loan failure Charlie Keating, or that he cheated on his wife, but instead what an upfront righteous guy he is. And this whole thing kind of backfired. There was a gentleman that worked in this American Voluntary Medical Team organization where she stole the drugs that she fired because he had found out that she was stealing the drugs and was heavily involved with the drugs. And because he had found out that she was getting people to write prescriptions for her and that she had even used his name to write prescription for him. For her. And the McCain machine in Arizona did very well at covering the whole thing up. She did no prison time. She was raising four small children at the time. She got out of this with practically nothing. And it's just another example of how those in power can buy themselves some justice, I guess, if you want to call it that. It's a very ugly story. And the reason I bring it up, number one, is to point out the manipulative powers of one John Sidney McCain. The other reason I bring it up is to show you that the elite can get special treatment if they have the money to get it. And probably the third and most important reason I bring that up today is because of the totally unfair treatment that Michelle Obama has gotten from the mainstream media. She's been criticized for statements. She's been criticized for her fist bumps. She's been criticized for... You should read the horrible things, and I should have brought the paper in, written in our newspaper here in Fort Myers, Florida, about her. Letters to the editor. Inconceivable to me that people could sit down and write such hateful letters about a woman who is obviously intellectually gifted, a very nice-looking lady, a very much the lady, highly intelligent, from all indications a great mother and wife, and yet the hate pours out of people's pens and email when they write to the local paper and papers all over this country. And we have seen no such stories about Cindy McCain. I just think we ought to know everything about both of them. If we're going to criticize Michelle Obama, it's very unfortunate. Somebody just sent me a video here. I don't know if I can play this right now or not. I'll try it. No, I can't. All right. and the other thing is, and I am reminded, there were many, many lies about her drug addiction. She said that she said this and said that. She had told many, many lies about it, and it wasn't just a straight-out confession about the whole thing. She did never really come clean until she was absolutely forced to. So, I just thought you ought to all know that. And now you do. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. 866-546-5254. John McCain, the husband, has also got a background that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. I know many of you know that John McCain was married before and that he has, two, maybe three grown children from previous marriage. I think it's three. One of them is a vice president in Cindy McCain's beer distributorship. So, obviously, he's on good terms with his father. But the story with John McCain, the story with John McCain and his first wife is somewhat unusual. And the whole story about that, yes, we've all heard, oh, he was married before, and blah, 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 and we've even, you know, we've heard a lot of that. There was a story in the Los Angeles Times, and I seem to be rambling here. There was a story in the Los Angeles Times just, maybe a week ago, that, for my money, was a very important story. It was a story that should have been carried by all of the mainstream media. It should have been carried by cable news. It should have been in every newspaper, every important newspaper in America, because of the fact that we've vetted, you know, Reverend Wright and Mr. Ayers and Renzo and Obama, and everything that he's ever done has been laid in front of the public. So I think it's only fair that everything John McCain's ever done is laid before the public. And if he's misstepped here and there, everybody ought to know about it just the same as they know about Barack Obama. And so this big story was run in the Los Angeles Times, and I did not see it any place else in the mainstream media. I did not. Maybe it appeared someplace else, but I didn't see it. And I would like to read you a few excerpts from it, from the Los Angeles Times in July the 11th, 2008. Outside her Bel Air home, Nancy Reagan stood arm in arm with John McCain and offered a significant but less than exuberant endorsement. She said, and I quote, "Ronnie and I always waited until everything was decided, and then we endorsed," end quote. The Republican matriarch said in March, "Well, obviously, this is the nominee of the party." They were the only words she would speak during the five-minute photo op. In a written statement, she described McCain as a good friend for over 30 years, but that friendship was strained in the late 1970s by McCain's decision to divorce his first wife, Carol, who was particularly close to the Reagans, and within weeks marry Cindy Hensley, the young heiress to a lucrative Arizona beer distributorship. Nothing particularly unusual about that story, but the Reagans rushed in to help Carol, finding her a new home in Southern California with the family of Reagan aide Edwin Meese III, and a series of political and White House jobs to ease her through that difficult time. McCain, who is the GOP nominee, has made several statements about how he divorced Carol and married Hensley that conflict with the public record. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And that is why I am bringing this to your attention. His account of the story does conflict with the public record. And if we're going to vet each of those candidates properly, we should know the truth, whether it hurts or not. In his 2002 memoir, Worth the Fighting For, McCain wrote that he had separated from Carol before he began dating Hensley. He said, and I quote, "I spent as much time with Cindy in Washington and Arizona as our jobs would allow. I was separated from Carol, but our divorce would not become final until February of 1980. Well, an examination of court documents tells a different story. McCain did not sue his wife for divorce until February 19, 1980, and he wrote in his court petition that he and his wife had cohabited until January 7th of that year, or for the first 9 months of his relationship with Hensley. Aha. Although McCain suggested in his autobiography that month passed between his divorce and remarriage, the divorce was granted April 2nd, 1980, and he wed Hensley in a private ceremony 5 weeks later. McCain obtained an Arizona marriage license on March 6, 1980, while still legally married to his first wife. Until McCain filed for divorce, the Reagans and their inner circle assumed he was happily married, and they were stunned to learn otherwise, according to several close aides. Everybody was upset with him, recalled Nancy Reynolds, a top aide to the former president, who introduced him to McCain. By contrast, some of McCain's friends, including the Senate aide who was at the reception where McCain first met Hensley, believed he was separated at the time. So again, his account of things don't jibe with the truth. This is a presidential candidate. We also know that his account of things doesn't always jibe with the truth. If you saw the interview last week when he was in Pittsburgh, and he told a reporter, and he said in all truthfulness, that when he was a POW, in order to get them off his back, they asked him, he told them, he volunteered the fact that they were asking him questions and they wanted him to give up his fellow pilots' names, his squad members' names, and he gave them, he said, the names of the Pittsburgh Steelers' Steel Curtain defense. Oddly enough, earlier in his autobiography, he had told that same story, but he mentioned the offensive line of the Green Bay Packers. I guess the story depends on which town he's in. Could have been the Cleveland Browns, the New York Giants, the Jets. Could have been any of those, I guess, depending on where he was. Problem is, when he gave that story, and I believe it was in 1969, if my memory serves me correct, the Pittsburgh Steelers had a horrible football team. The Steel Curtain wasn't even there yet. Maybe they were there, but they hadn't made any claim to fame. And I doubt very much that any Pittsburgh Steeler fan, I shouldn't say the word any, I doubt that a very many Pittsburgh Steeler fans could tell you today who was on the 1969 Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line. I don't think they could. So this was a flat-out fabrication by John McCain for political expediency once again. And yes, this has to do with family values. This is a word we heard considerably during the last election and the one before, and we're not being hammered with it as much this time, and we all know why, because of the god-awful stories that have come out about so many Republicans since this family values line was being used so much. We know of countless stories of indiscretions by Republicans, and so that has died down. We also know that the evangelicals are not as rabid about this candidate as they have been others. So that's why we haven't heard as much about that. But back to this Los Angeles Times interview. They tried to interview Carol McCain for this interview, and she wouldn't respond to the request. All she has ever said is this to McCain biographer Robert Timberg. She said, John was turning 40 and wanting to be 25 again. I think maybe there's, what, 17 years between him and Cindy McCain? I think that's what it is, 17 or 15. I'm not exactly sure. And after leaving the White House, Carol McCain worked in press relations in the Washington area, retiring about 5 years ago after working for the National Soft Drink Association. She now lives in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and has not remarried. One of the sons is a commercial airline pilot, and one of them works for the beer distributorship. And they had a daughter, Sydney, who works in the music industry in Canada. Carol and John did. John McCain, who calls himself a foot soldier in the Reagan Revolution, said in his memoir, My Divorce from Carol, whom the Reagans loved, caused a change in our relationship. Nancy was particularly upset with me and treated me on the few occasions we encountered each other after I came to Congress with a cool correctness that made her displeasure clear. Nancy Reagan wouldn't respond to calls for comments on this either. The particularly troubling thing about this, and we had mentioned that it was at a time, a low point in her life. Um, McCain met Carol Shep through a mutual friend and fellow midshipman at the Naval Academy, from which McCain graduated in 1958. And she had been married before, and that marriage ended in June 1964. And McCain started seeing Carol shortly after that. They were married in Philadelphia. In July of 1965, McCain adopted her two sons, and they had a daughter together. Then in October of 67, McCain's plane was shot down and he was captured by the North Vietnamese. She became very active in the POW-MIA movement. A former model, she dedicated herself to her children, and she kept the family together, friends said, while awaiting his return. She had the perseverance to carry on. She was a great, unique person, her friends say. She had a little baby and small kids. Well, on Christmas Eve, 1969, she was driving alone in Philadelphia. Her car skidded and struck a utility pole. She was thrown into the snow. She broke both legs, an arm, and her pelvis, and she was operated on a dozen times. And in the treatment, she lost about 5 inches in height. And after John McCain was released in March of 1969 and returned to the U.S., he told friends that Carol was not the woman he had married. So he divorced her. Like I said, that happens, but as they're bringing up on the chat room, some of it, the lies about it, doesn't fit into the family values thing very well. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a break once again. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Guy James Show. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We're talking about the McCains right now. We planned on dedicating most of this hour to a little bit of educating and information about the McCain family, and that's what we're doing right now for no other reason other than to just kind of level the playing field and make sure that as long as we're going to know everybody, everything about Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, we should know everything about the McCains as well, and that's what this hour is all about. How many of you know the whole story, the straight talk? How many of you seen any transparency in the McCain medical records? It's something to consider. It's something we need to consider about anybody running for president. After all, at least we think, the American people think, that this is the most important office in the world, the most important man in the world, perhaps. And we should know his health. We should know all about his health. We should do our best to know if the man that we're taking all this time to elect is healthy enough to carry out the duties of the job. And McCain's age is irrelevant unless it affects his ability to function in a world that's radically changed since his formative years. But McCain's apparent computer illiteracy, for example, it's not a result of his being, 71 years old? I think it's 71. Rather, it does suggest someone who's coddled and out of touch and not very interested in learning new things. Ergo, the Czechoslovakia thing. I know. Okay. But McCain's history of cancer isn't tied to his age, but some things are, such as the less publicized array of his potentially compromising conditions, his ailments and medications. And everybody knows about the cancer. I think all of us know that. In the last 15 years, McCain's had every kind of skin cancer you can get. Basal cell cancer, squamous cell cancer, and, of course, malignant melanoma. And quite a few precancerous lesions, said Dr. Nancy Snyderman, who reviewed McCain's medical records. He's going to get another skin cancer, the NBC News chief medical editor predicted. The melanoma on his temple, discovered in 2000, is the most worrying. His current doctors described a single site, but buried in the medical reports purchased on or released on May 23rd, was previously undisclosed information, and two pathologists at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, who examined the melanoma specimen in 2000, noted both a primary and a satellite cancer, meaning the original site had metastasized, and reoccurrence was more likely than with a single site. And it's really something that reporters even unearthed that at all, because in an absolute parody of openness and straight talk, as they pride themselves on, McCain allowed a few hand-picked news outlets 3 hours, that's an average of 9 seconds per page, of his 1,173 pages of medical records. That's it. They were cloistered, about 20 reporters in a room. They barred all cell phones, internet access, and leaving the room except for bathroom breaks. And that was it. They wouldn't allow any more looks at his medical records. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the right thing. They talk about his mother, about him having the genes. His mother's, 95, something like that. But do remember, his father died of a heart attack at 70. His grandfather died at 61. And so his health is of a concern, to the American people, and they should know all about it. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy?
Yes.
Hey, this is Sue. Are you in a break right now?
No.
Oh, live on air. Geez, I'm sorry. Hey, I want to call in, talk about the McCains a little bit.
We weren't talking about the McCains today. I'm having a little fun with you.
and real quickly, your non-toll line isn't working. I tried a couple times, and
oh,
I had to call in on your toll
line. Well, that's
line.
Great.
But I had read an article, and I'll send it on to you, that Cindy McCain had had a stroke back in 2004, something like that. And it left her with slurred speech and a limp, pretty pronounced limp. You know, one leg was dragging. She couldn't use one arm. I believe it was her right leg and right arm. And she said that she was going to take that summer and get herself well. So she, enrolled herself at one of those rehab clinics where you live there.
Uh-huh.
And she said that John's reaction was, he was not happy with me. Now, why on earth would any husband not be happy with their wife getting their health back?
Now, I hate to sit here and be the beauty shop and barbershop gossip, but doesn't that just sound like John McCain?
It sure does.
Yeah.
It sure does, and I think that much would speak to why he opposes health care for everybody. I mean, for God's sake, if he doesn't even want his own wife to rehabilitate, what makes anyone think he'd give a damn if any of us rehabilitate? It also explains why he would vote against the veterans' benefits.
Yeah. Well, I've got this impression of him as being a real control freak. The more I read about it, you know, he's Mr. Macho, and his wife has got to be completely under his control and all that. And I think you heard yesterday the name that he called her in public and all that. I can guarantee you if I'd ever said that to my wife, I'd have had my block knocked off. I can't imagine getting away with that. I really can't, nor can I imagine ever saying it. I really can't.
Yeah, and, you were talking about his first wife. I can't help but think that if, so many people that suffer strokes end up with one side of their face drooping for the rest of their life, you know, there's not much you can do about it. You're just kind of at the mercy of what the stroke does to you.
Of course.
And, if he's just so caught up on looks, what would have happened to Cindy if one side of her face was left drooping after the stroke that she had? She's not the beauty queen anymore. Would he have still stayed with her just because of the cash,
I hate to be cruel, but she's got a lot of money.
Yeah, because it's obvious that he hasn't matured enough to accept medical conditions, because look at them, he wasn't happy with her when she went to rehab for 3 months. She was there 3 or 4 months.
And he wasn't happy with her.
Yeah, he was not happy. I'll send you the story because it's all in her own words.
Wow.
And it's like, oh my God. And the thing about on that YouTube link, she was talking on Jay Leno's show one night. She was on with Jay Leno, and she was talking about Jay Leno had asked her a question about is it true that you both lied to each other when you first met? And she was like, yeah, I said I was 5 years older, and he said he was 5 years younger. And we didn't know how old each other really was until they published our marriage application in the paper and read it there. So she goes, she says, so we started our marriage on a tissue of lies.
There
now,
you go.
Isn't that quaint?
Yeah.
A tissue of lies.
Let me tell you a quick story, a little antidote to go along with that one.
All right.
I, when I was a very young man, still at home, we lived out in the country, and we had this neighbor couple that was, good friends of everybody in the neighborhood, and they were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. And we all went to the celebration, and they had the cake and the whole thing, and everybody's sitting in the living room on folding chairs and how things go. And we're all sitting there, and as a surprise, one of the sons had had this engraving made for them on this beautiful plaque of both of their birth certificates, Alfred and Imo. And so they passed it around, and when it got to Imo, Imo looked at Alfred with the wildest look on her face, and he said, "What?" And she said, "Now, they'd been married for 50 years." And she says, "You told me when we were married that you were 10 years older than me." turns out he was 20 years older than her.
Oh, my God.
And that fact was hidden from her for 50 years.
I know.
So a little side story to go along with it.
Yeah. Well, and one last thing about her drug addiction. On that same appearance with Jay Leno, she said that her parents approached her one day and said, "You just don't look right." And she said, and that was it. I quit taking them. But this interview that I'll email to you, it's a print article, said that she had blamed on a back condition because she had some back surgery or something. And later she said that, you know, once she had a hysterectomy, she never had any back pain since then. So obviously her pain wasn't related to her back condition. But the thing was, in the story, I forget the exact content and context, and I won't even try to paraphrase it, but the whole thing with her addiction was that it came at the same she was using the drugs to deal with the stress from the Keating 5 scandal, because that was when she became addicted, was the same time the story on Keating 5 was breaking. So chances are it had absolutely nothing to do with back pain or needing a hysterectomy or anything like that. It's just the fact that you can take a pill and be all dopey and loopy and not have to worry about anyone smelling alcohol on your breath or anyone seeing tracks on your arms or snorting or anything like that, you know?
Old Eddie Arnold song, "Make the World Go Away." Make the world go away.
So it's all just a quaint little tissue of lies, you know. And in the meantime, we're letting the media paint Obamas as terrorists and God only knows what. I'm glad you're covering this because for as much as we want to make believe a bunch of for as much as the media wants us to make believe a bunch of stuff about the Obamas, it's just not true. But the cold hard facts about the McCains are there, and I think if we overlook it, you know, we'll overlook the fact that just like when Ronald Reagan ran, you know, he was campaigning for Truman and really badmouthed the Republicans.
Sure.
You know, if we forget their past again, we're going to end up with another Ronald Reagan and obviously a third Bush term.
Don't say that. Don't say that. I wouldn't be able to stand for that happening. No. Oh, well, mommy. No, I wouldn't be able to stand that. But you're right. You're right. And in a lot of ways, some of this coverage isn't so good because it's nonstop 24/7 and they can't move without it. But in another way, it's kind of good because from now on, there's not going to be any leaving this out and leaving that out if the press is fair. And so far during this election cycle, they have not been fair. I think anybody would have to admit that. They haven't been a bit fair.
That's right.
So that's our aim here. I don't tell any of these stories with any malice or any reason whatsoever other than to make sure that we try and make this fair.
That's right. Both sides of the card here.
It's our little megaphone here. Thanks for calling, Sue. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Guy, and keep up the good work.
Thanks very much. We do need to know all this. And John McCain has a decent shot at being president of the United States. So why shouldn't we, the people of this country, know just everything there is to know about him? If there's anybody we should know everything about, it would be him. And you stop and think about some of his decisions. By his economic decisions, the next president will help swing the price of food, the food you eat, the wages you earn. And it doesn't matter if it's here in the United States or any place on earth. He's going to have an effect on that. And I was reading an article in the Independent, and it's a little worrying that John McCain, who does have a reasonable chance of winning, says that the issue of economics is not something I've understood as well as I should. Well, to be honest, I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated. Well, that's a bit disconcerting to me. Man is running for the most powerful office in the world, and he's setting. I mean, this is a man who can't tell his Sunni from his Shia. and who opposes, he opposed the Northern Ireland peace process. He said that was given in to terrorism. Well, how much problem has there been in Northern Ireland since they had that peace process? And he was dead set against it. Don't let him forget about that. And when he comes up and says, I know how to win wars. He was promoting that line again today. I know how to win wars. John McCain, which winning war have you been involved in? I ask you once again, which winning war? Is that another figment of your imagination, like the Steel Curtain, the Pittsburgh Steelers I was talking about? Have you talked yourself into believing that you've been in a winning war? If so, which one is it? Oh, I forgot. There was Grenada. He probably... Was he in office when Grenada went? That's the last war we won. I don't know. But this is a man who wants to be president. And when you make him talk about the economy, and up until last week, he goes on to tell everybody, you know, I rely on the circle that I've developed over many years, people like Phil Graham. Phil Graham. I wouldn't brag about having Phil Graham be my economic advisor. Did you hear about Phil Graham, this UBS bank? They're thinking about denying them a license to... a charter to do business in the United States now because of this tax evasion thing. They've been helping Americans hide billions of dollars in tax, tax evasion. They've been complicit in that, coming over here and seeking business from American people to put their money in there and hide it for tax purposes from the IRS. And guess who has been a consultant for them? Phil Graham. Phil Graham. He's been McCain's best friend in politics for a long time, him and Joe Lieberman. They worked very hard together when Graham was in the Senate to defeat Hillary Clinton's health care to poor Americans bill. He's for slashing every bit of government spending that he can, but the thing is, when he talks, when Phil Graham, the economic advisor, to John McCain looks at slashing government spending, let me tell you where he's swinging the axe. He's swinging the axe on the poor people. He was told that paying for health care plunged many 80-year-olds into poverty. He said, hey, most of us don't have the luxury of living to be 80 years old, so it's hard for me to feel sorry for him. Imagine saying that to a bunch of elderly people. And later on, one of those same 80-year-olds approached him because she was terrified she wouldn't be able to pay her medical bills. And Graham laughed and told her to find herself a rich husband. Well, not the kind of guy you'd want to have advising you on anything, I don't think. And Graham, who advises this man who wants to be our president on the economy, Graham says government regulation of the economy is akin to communism and must be destroyed. And keep in mind what Phil Graham was involved in, as now he's the advisor to McCain on economic things. Do you want your president to be influenced by a man like Phil Graham, when he pushed through the law that exempted Enron from both government regulation and public disclosure? That's right. Phil Graham was looking out for Enron. He got them deregulated so they could do any damn thing they wanted to. Meanwhile, they were employing Phil Graham's wife to the tune of $1 million. And Enron was his biggest campaign contributor. Is this the judgment you want the President of the United States to have, is to have a man like Phil Graham be his economic advisor, possibly Treasury Secretary? I think that's out now after that gaffe of this last week. Believe me, it wouldn't be a gaffe. Believe me, I absolutely believe that if Phil Graham and John McCain had been sitting on a sofa in McCain's Straight Talk Express bus, Graham would have said that, and McCain would have slapped his knee and agreed with him. You can believe that. That's how they think. And when I say they, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And Graham learned a lot from that Enron scandal. To try harder and harder, he turned his attention then to the mortgage companies. There had always been an unwritten deal in U.S. politics that the government would rescue the banks if they grew sick. But in return, the banks had to take the sensible medicine of regulation. Well, Graham thought, regulation for banks? That's crazy. Why would banks ever need to be rescued in a free market? So in 2000, this is the kind of guy Phil Graham is. John McCain's economic advisor, in 2000, while everybody was riveted by the Gore v. Bush standoff in Florida, Graham slipped into a 3,000-page bill, 268 pages of his own, which radically deregulated the banking system. Radically deregulated the banking system. And look where we're at now because of the deregulation of the banking system. He left the Senate. He gets himself a megabucks job at UBS. UBS is a bank that raked in billions of dollars from the changes that Graham put in. And so now we've got the collapse. Many people don't think we're at anywhere near the bottom of it. The subprime mortgages fell apart because of deregulation. Millions of people facing repossession. And the government had to step in. I always listen to the advice of Warren Buffett. I think if I'm going to listen to any economic advice, give me Warren Buffett. I'll listen to him any day, over and above anybody. I think the guy is one smart guy. He's proven that over the years. But he pointed out that Phil Graham has twice tossed financial weapons of mass destruction into the U.S. economy. Yet instead of shunning him, McCain made Graham the co-chair of his presidential campaign, hinted he might make him Treasury Secretary. McCain, the supposed scourge of buying influence, was even happy for Graham to be simultaneously a paid lobbyist for the mortgage industry, all the while helping to write his speeches about the mortgage crisis. Now you tell me that isn't a sorry mess. And this is the man the Republican candidate wants as his economic advisor, a man with no heart, a man with no soul, a man who has had a drastic, terrible effect on the economy of the United States of America while enriching himself and his wife. These are things you should know about John McCain. These are things you should know when you're at the water fountain with your fellow workers, with your friends. These are the things you should know. The media has been so totally one-sided in this election cycle, I've never seen it so much this way. Never. I've followed politics now for well over 40 years, probably 47 years to be true, and I have not seen a more one-sided media than we're seeing right now. And it's going to be our mission on this program from now until the election happens to not only keep you up on current events and our ideas and opinions about what's going on, but we're also want to bring you up to speed on things you don't hear in the mainstream media every day that should be there. And we know why they're not there. It's the old bottom line news thing nowadays. Oh, by the way, speaking of news, did you see where Obama raised $52 million in June? $52 million, and McCain raised $22 million. Now, the Republicans still have more money in the bank, the RNC and McCain, than does the DNC and Obama. But Obama raised $52 million. He raised $55 million once during the primary, but if he can maintain a fundraising ability like this, $52 million in June, while McCain had $22 million in June, I think that's pretty important. I don't think he's going to get outspent. course, then again, we didn't get outspent during the last cycle. I think Kerry actually ended up with some money in the bank that they didn't spend. But anyway, it's good to know that the money's coming in, even during these hard times. And that surprises me. I know many blogs and websites are having fundraisers right now, and we've tried it ourselves. It's a losing proposition. I know many big websites are trying to raise money and blogs right now, having no luck at all. So it is fascinating to me that Obama's raising that kind of money. Well, thanks for listening today. You've been listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network.